Good afternoon, I'm Kathy Lewis. It's a list on which no school wants to be. A controversial new study by researchers at Johns Hopkins University labeled 22 Virginia high schools, including several in Hampton Roads, as dropout factories based on the percentage of students that make it to their senior year.
I think the reason why people drop out really is because they feel pressured or they feel like they have no use in school or feel like the school is like boring for them if they don't get that help or support they need.
We'll talk about the study, what local schools made the list, and why on today's show. We'll also visit with Norfolk High School teacher Mr. Smeagol, who is making a difference in the classroom every day.
Up in the morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard and hoping to pass.
What a pleasure to welcome Tommy Smeagol. He is the Norview High School teacher who was named the 2008 Virginia Teacher of the Year. Mr. Smeagol, congratulations.
Thank you, Kathy. Thank you a lot. It's a big honor.
It's a huge honor. The first time a Norfolk teacher has received that honor in at least 40 years.
That's a surprise to me because of all the wonderful teachers that I work with. Surprised we haven't had this honor before.
This is, you teach at Norview, which is your alma mater, is that right?
Yes, it is. I'm a 1996 graduate.
Now, did you know when you graduated in 96 that you wanted to come back and teach there, or was that something that came to you later?
I think in my heart I wanted to come back to Norview because I just had such a wonderful experience here as a student. And I thought it would just be neat to come back and be able to give back what everybody gave to me. But you never know in teaching, you know, sometimes you just take a job where you can get one.
Right, exactly. So in the beginning, you, and what an impressive track record, you were teaching earth science.
Yes.
And boy, the pass rates on the standards of learning really went up under your leadership.
Well, when I first started teaching in 2000, that was a couple years after SOLs were just getting implemented. And I think a lot of schools were really unsure with what to do. And being fresh out of college, that's what all of the teachers at ODU were starting to, you know, turn their education courses to. This is how, you know, we need to work on getting kids to pass. So I think I was bringing a different kind of vision in to it. And it was a struggle at first. But, you know, you just you get creative and you I think SOLs were kind of taking the fun out of teaching. And I wanted to bring a little bit of that back as well as the rigor. And I think that's what made the difference.
Well, the rigor is clearly there. The test scores went from 49% pass rate in 2000 to 79% just 5 years later. And then you finished teaching earth science, and now you're teaching this teen leadership course. Tell us about that.
Sure. We have Norfolk Public Schools received a grant from the federal government. It's a small learning community grant, and each of the high schools in Norfolk are to create a small learning community in their school, multiple small learning communities, and they have 5 years to do that. And at Norview, at the same time I was working on my master's degree in administration, I was doing a project on freshman transition, and I was looking at Norview's freshman transition rate, promotion rate, which was not that high. In fact, it was 38%. And Norview and my administrator and the staff, we decided that we wanted to do something about it. So we started piloting a class, a team leadership class for at-risk freshmen, and working with them to teach them how they can be resilient and overcome the obstacles that are facing them in their lives, get them involved in community service, and help them be successful. And now every freshman in our school is in that leadership course. We have four full-time leadership teachers, so three more in addition to me that are now doing this.
And did you say that only 38% of the students were passing to the 10th grade?
Yes. Norfolk has one of the hardest and most rigorous, I guess you could say, rigorous promotion requirements, whereas a student needs to have a math credit, an English credit, 5 credits, and an SOL credit. Most school systems don't require that many have that many requirements for a student to get promoted. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why our rates were low. But now Norview is just passing 60% since we started this program. And that's with just putting a portion of our students in the freshman class.
Even while keeping those standards that high.
Yeah, I mean, Norview has top SOL scores, but, you know, even we realize that we need to, our work is never done. I know that too as a teacher, my work is never done. And so, you know, we're seeing the success now that we're working with our students and helping them, you know, like I said, be resilient. Our students bring a lot on a lot of stories of struggle, and they bring a lot on their shoulders, and it's hard to teach content when they're bringing that to the plate.
You know, I wonder, as a person who is Virginia Teacher of the Year, and my goodness, you know, you can hear the passion in your voice. When you see a report like that report that was released recently out of Johns Hopkins that described the high schools in Norfolk as dropout factories, and we should note there were 22 schools across the state that were so defined, and you know these stories, you know what these kids are bringing, I wonder how you put reports like that into context for yourself.
You know, it's hard because, you know, when a report comes out like that, the public is always looking for a reason to criticize public schools. And it's unfortunate because a lot of those people who criticize public schools have never stepped a foot in public schools, or, you know, they haven't been in a public school in many years. And I think that's unfair because I think people really need to come in and see what we're working for what we're doing, meet our students because they're just such great kids. And that Johns Hopkins report was, you know, missing a few things. The data was not collected correctly. And you know, I know some people said that you can't use military. But, you know, even this year, I've lost six students already that have transferred out of my school. And in my classes, according to that study, those students would have been considered dropout students because they would not have tracked them until they graduated. So, you know, Norview and Norfolk Public Schools has a high transient population. We have students moving in and out. In addition to losing, you know, those six students, I also picked up four students. And I think that's it's unfair to, you know, to judge schools on that. They need to come in and see what we're actually doing. And that report was a little bit old. You know, we realize we're not done here, and we're working really hard to make sure our students are successful, and we're seeing those results.
You know, I wonder, too, at the age of 29, you know, I'm very sure that there are a cadre of teachers in their late 40s, early to mid-50s, who are sort of the buckle in the belt there in public schools, who will be retiring, who are starting to retire now.
Absolutely.
And I know that salaries are always a struggle, and I know there are all kinds of challenges. But you still sound so enthusiastic about what you do. So what would you say to people who are considering a career in teaching? How has it changed you, and what would you say if someone were making or trying to make that decision about whether to go into teaching?
Well, I'll tell you what, there is no other career where I think that you could absolutely make a difference in the lives of other people. You know, I don't want to shortchange other professions, but I mean, it's just amazing to see how, you know, just as one person, how much of a difference I could make in the lives of kids who really need it. You know, our kids are lacking a lot of parental support. And, you know, I that's what's keeping me motivated is I've kind of I'm slipping in the place and helping the students with that, you know, and like I said, their struggles. And that's what keeps me motivated and going. And sure, it's hard because I can't, it's not 100%. I wish I had the time to help every single kid out. But I know that the more effort I give and everything that I'm continuing to do, that every time I'm just picking up another student, I'm picking up another student. And hopefully one day it will be 100%. It's hard because you want to do it, but sometimes there's just so many struggles, so many things that our kids are going through that even we cannot help them with that. And it does take a very supportive community to do this. It takes, you know, outside of the school, parents, administrators, teachers, everybody needs to get involved.
Boy,
in
no
public
kidding.
Schools. Yeah.
You know, which is one of the reasons. To me, it doesn't matter if you have kids in public school or private school, if you have kids who are grown and gone, if you don't even have kids yet, if you will never have kids yet. There are few institutions in life in which we all have a stake the way we do in public education. It's just a fact. It's just how it is.
Absolutely. And, you know, any teacher who ever went into the profession for money has a rude awakening. But, I mean, that's why we don't go. Nobody goes into education. We know that our salaries are not that great. We don't do it for the money. We're doing it because we love what we do and helping our students from all levels, from kindergarten all the way up to high school, even higher education.
Well, I hesitate to make a to say this because someone will say I'm in favor of cloning. I don't care about that whole issue. I just wish there were more of you in the classroom because you're doing a great job. Tommy Smeagol, thank you so much for being with us. We wish best of success as the 2008 Teacher of the Year. And, you know, we don't know about any of those other candidates for National Teacher of the Year, but I think you've got our vote. So we hope that's helpful.
Well, thank you. And I hope I'm making Norfolk proud and Norfolk Public Schools.
That's a fact, my friend. Thank you so much, and we'll let you get back to the classroom. Thanks very much.
Bye.
Tommy Smeagol is the Norview High School teacher who was named the 2008 Virginia Teacher of the Year, the first Norfolk teacher to get that honor in 40 years, and he will now be the state's nominee for National Teacher of the Year. So you can see it's a study in contrasts. You have a marvelous teacher like Tommy Smeagol, who's teaching at a school that is on the list in the worst category in Virginia, according to this new Johns Hopkins study. The study took a look at schools in which fewer than 60% of the freshmen who started high school actually graduated 3 years later. And we should note that we did try to reach Dr. Robert Balfance, who's the research scientist at the Center for Social Organization of Schools at Johns Hopkins, but he did not return our request for an interview. At Norview, for example, 29% of the freshmen who started finished. 29%. At Lakeland High School in Suffolk, 48% of freshmen make it to their senior year, At Hampton High, it was 55. Portsmouth, Norcom, and Woodrow Wilson made the list. And two schools in Virginia Beach made the list as well, Bayside and Green Run. I'm happy to have Jared Cotton with us today, who's the assistant superintendent in charge of research, evaluation, and assessment in Virginia Beach Public Schools. Mr. Cotton, thank you for being with us today.
Great. Thank you for having me.
You wrote a very interesting editorial in the pages of the Virginian Pilot in which you talked about your view of the methodology of this study. And so I want to get your take on that and find out what you think it says about the two schools in your district.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the important topic here. First of all, any child who's not graduating or being successful is a problem and certainly makes this a worthy topic to discuss. The concerns that we have with the study, of course, are some of the limitations that we see in the study, where it's more of a retention rate versus a dropout rate. As you know, in the state of Virginia, we do identify students as dropouts using certain criteria, and in the particular study, they looked at enrollment numbers over time, where they looked at ninth grade or 10th grade student enrollment numbers and compare that 2 or 3 years later. And when you're looking at just enrollment numbers, you're not tracking individual students, which of course makes it problematic because anytime you want to do a study like this, a study that's as important as this one is, you really need to look at individual student data.
So these could be students who left the school for any number of reasons before graduation, is that right?
Certainly. These are students who may have left the particular school, left the district. These also could be students who take longer than 4 years to graduate, which is not entirely uncommon because some of our special education students or limited English proficient students take more time to meet graduation requirements. And of course, there are other options for graduation as well that students take advantage of now. And there's certainly several options today than there were several years ago.
So having said that and noted the concerns about the methodology in the report and the labels and whether we're really talking about apples and apples or apples and oranges, how concerned are you about what this report says about Bayside and Green Run? I mean, where would you want to see those graduation rates?
Well, there's no question that we always need to improve our graduation rates at all and success rates at all of our schools. But Bayside and Green Run in particular, they've seen great improvements over the past several years. Like Bayside, for example, and again, using the state calculation where the state identifies individual students as dropouts based on the criteria, Bayside from 2.91% dropout rate for this past year from a 4.94% dropout rate in 2003.
And those are dropouts where you say these kids are gone, we can't account for them in military transfers, we can't account for them in GED graduations, we can't account for them being in other schools.
Exactly. And what that means is we really don't know their whereabouts, or we perhaps they did not re-enroll and were not we're not sure of where they are, so the state has specific guidelines. In fact, when we get the preliminary reports from the state still goes back and tries to capture some of these students because they move throughout the state and we're not aware of their whereabouts, but the state will pick them up using their data system.
The other thing I know that there has been a great deal of focus on in the last couple of years is the tracking of homeless children, which is also a feature of keeping track of kids. With the increasing numbers of kids in the transient world of homelessness, moving from hotel to hotel or housing situation to housing situation, I know there's been a great deal of effort at trying to keep track of those kids, but it is not an easy task.
Certainly, because it really comes down to making contacts, making home visits, trying to track those students down, and it's very difficult.
Dr. Cotton, thank you so much for joining us today from Virginia Beach.
Sure, thank you. And again, it's an important topic, and I think it's worthy of discussion. So thank you for inviting me.
You bet. Dr. Jared Cotton is the Assistant Superintendent in charge of Research, Evaluation, and Assessment in Virginia Beach Public Schools. So what we're wondering about is what you think about this report. What do you think are some of the factors that lead to kids not graduating after they start high school in the freshman year? 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240 are the numbers where you can join us today. I'm happy to have Kathy Grimes with us today. She's the education editor and writer at the Daily Press, and she's been doing some significant writing about this in the pages of the Daily Press and at dailypress.com. Kathy Grimes, welcome, and thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm very interested in this methodology issue that Dr. Cotton has raised. You looked at that as well in the course of your reporting. So what role does that methodology difference, or the way we're counting these children and identifying them, what role does that play in this report?
It's actually been something that's been somewhat controversial and an issue for several years now. No Child Left Behind requires or wants school districts to track graduation as one of the many factors they use for, you know, how successful a school district is. And there's there are a number of education advocates out there that feel that high school should happen in 4 years. A successful high school should be able to get students in the door as freshmen and send them out at the end of their senior year with diplomas. And to track that success, if that's how you define success, you want to look at who walks in the door as a freshman and who leaves at the end of their senior year with a diploma. And so there was a real push to get a 4-year, or what they call a cohort graduation rate, where you're tracking just those students rather than anybody who might be taking extra time to graduate. The issue with Dr. Balfance's data is, it's a valid formula, and if you and I took the numbers and we plugged them in and we ran the same thing, we'd get the same information. But what it doesn't take into effect are the same things Dr. Cotton was just saying, the kids who transfer out, perhaps the kids who are older freshmen. You might have an enlarged freshman class because you've got students who've perhaps not progressed in credits to become sophomores yet. It doesn't take into effect a number of students who might graduate maybe in that summer or the following year.
I thought it was interesting, too, when you talked to Tommy Smeagol, who's the teacher of the year for Virginia. Mm-hmm. I thought that was an interesting distinction that he was making about the fact that in order to pass from being a freshman to a sophomore at Norview, there is a pretty rigorous set of requirements, and not all kids make that at that time. Not all kids can make that happen.
Freshman failure rate is a huge issue, and it's an issue nationwide. There are schools that, you know, they will tell you that they've got, upwards 40-50% of their freshmen will fail at least one semester of one class.
And see, here's the question that's interesting. When you look at some of these statistics in some of these schools, just as a physical plant issue, you have to wonder whether the school could handle it if all those kids stayed in school. I'm not suggesting that's an argument for kids dropping out. I'm saying that to some extent, it almost looks like there's a little bit of this expectation kind of built into the process in terms of the physical plant.
That's true, and that's an issue that many districts are addressing. And also, there's a real move as well to look at alternative ways to get that diploma. If you've got a freshman who's, a student who's maybe 17, 18, and still technically a freshman,
maybe they shouldn't be in the same class with a 14-year-old.
Well, and maybe you should be looking at some other way for them to get that diploma, because they're not going to want to graduate at 21. They're not going to want to hang out that long. So we've got a lot of districts that are looking alternative ways to get that high school diploma or find some way to get an equivalent to a high school diploma for those students. But there's not a lot of incentive to do that. If you look at the federal education law and you know other laws out there, there's not a lot of reward for essentially recovering students who've dropped out or keeping a student maybe two, three extra years so that they get that high school diploma and they can move on to, you know, post-secondary education or a job.
David's on the line from Hampton. He's somebody who's moved on to post-secondary education, and boy, you won't believe his story. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hey, Kathy. How are you doing?
All right.
You asked, you know, to call in about reasons people drop out. I know I dropped out of high school when I was a teenager because I was bored to tears. And I went back later and managed to get a bachelor's and a master's. But I think that there's an entire group in those statistics that are kind of fall through the cracks on both ends. We tend to teach to the middle. We tend to teach to the SOLs. And I think, you know, we have, a, you know, students who are on the, who have, you know, learning difficulties. But we also have a percentage on the other end that are gifted, talented, that have an incredibly high dropout rate. And I was just curious what you had to say about that.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, David. Let me ask you this before we get to that. When did you graduate? Well, when did you drop out?
I dropped out in 78. I got 78. My GED in 82. So.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, this is an interesting point that our caller is raising, Kathy Grimes. And I'm wondering, he says, look, he's bored. There's all kinds of reasons kids drop out of school. What did you find when you talked to kids about the reasons why they dropped out of school?
It was interesting. I've talked to dropouts, and I also, you know, after this report came out, I went out and talked to students who are enrolled currently in Hampton High School and asked them about what they saw around them, what they heard. And he's right. There are a lot of studies out there that show that students who are disconnected or bored, you know, they're not engaged in that school, engaged is the word that's often used these days, there's nothing there holding them there. They don't see the relevance of it, so they don't stick around. But you also hear from students that there are still some of the, I guess you could call them traditional reasons. We have English language learners coming in, struggling to learn the language on top of everything else. We have students who get pregnant and have families. We have a lot of students who are the breadwinners, you know, they're the earners for their families. So there are a lot of other reasons why a student may drop out. But as David said, one of them is that students are just, they're not connecting in that class.
But, you know, I was just thinking when you're talking about kids who are working, my daughter, who's a high school student, had a sort of a learning partner in the class. Mm-hmm. You know, they have them learn with somebody. It was just a very, very nice young man. And so they were trying to work out a time when they could schedule some time to work together. And he left her message and said he would ordinarily be happy to do it on Tuesday night, but he had to leave for his job at 8:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself, when school starts at 7:20 in the morning, that's a young man who is really working very, very hard. And you wonder how long kids can deal with that. I mean, I know that's not every child in school, but for this kid, he was pretty clear that his money was central to the family. And so, you know, there are all sorts and conditions of stories out there. Richard's on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I thought my point has partially been answered by previous callers concerning why students are bored, how many studies have been done in intensive interview of students to find out what about each course do the students find boring. And apparently the idea of relevance is probably the biggest factor. And I think that leads to my second question here of how much emphasis is placed on career counseling
in
schools so that can bridge the gap and show these students the potential relevance of the courses that they're taking toward the careers that they might hopefully be working toward.
Yeah, it's a great question.
I think the relevance here is the crucial thing, because you're not going to keep these talented and bright kids in school if they're bored by courses that they see completely unrelated to the real life that they sometimes are unfortunately very much exposed to.
Yeah. Richard, it's a great question. And I want to put that to Vince Rhodes, who's the communications manager and clerk of the school board for Norfolk Public Schools. Vince, good to have you with us today.
Thanks a lot.
I know that certainly in Norfolk Public Schools, you have a lot of different situations that you're dealing with?
Sure, and it's a great question. We do think relevance is an issue, and we do think it's important for kids to have a connection, number one, to their teachers, and we think Tommy Smeagol is a great example of how a teacher can have that connection, but also with the curriculum. And that's why it's important to look at different models, as some of the previous folks have discussed. For instance, you know, our tech center does a great job with some career, traditional career type training, but also does a great job with some things that are not so traditional. Oracle training, Microsoft engineering, those kinds of things where kids can get out and have a phenomenal job waiting for them right in this area. And so making kids aware of that, looking at other programs like middle college, where we actually have kids that attend high school and community college on the campus of TCC in downtown Norfolk. They're earning college credits. They're ready to move on. And it does connect to something that they find personally appealing and allows them to be successful and to see how it's relevant. Now, the back half of that is, though, the community needs to be involved. We need folks in our schools, or we need businesses connecting with our schools that come in and say, hey, these are the kinds of skills that we need. For example, shipbuilding. You got to have algebra. You need that geometry. These are the connections. It's not just some random course. Somebody's not trying to punish you in class. It's that you really do need this and there are useful applications. And so when the whole community supports us and can make those connections apparent in the home and in the school, the kids win, the community wins.
Yeah. And, you know, I know that so many school systems are this, but I think this is particularly true in a system like Norfolk, where it is a complete study in so many contrasts.
Sure.
You know, this all five of the Norfolk high schools were on this list that of this researcher who's defined as this term dropout factories, and yet Norfolk Public Schools also is a finalist for many years and won in recent years the Broad Prize for being the best urban school district in the country.
Yeah, you know, this is really an interesting time for public education. We have an older agrarian model where, quite frankly, the system wasn't designed to keep every single kid in school. Some went through, some were quote-unquote college material, some dropped out and got jobs, and yet we still struggle with those models. I think the great thing about Norfolk Public Schools is we're willing to look at this and say, is there a problem? Of course there's a problem. We've got a lot of work to do. We've got a lot of kids that we need to get through. We know ninth grade transition is a particular stumbling block. But the other thing that's great about Norfolk Public Schools is if you look at the Broad Prize, if you look at our data, we're showing that in an urban district, and we're the largest urban in the state and in the top 150 largest districts in the country, we're showing that there is success possible in an urban district. But there are a lot of issues. There are a lot of things that we have to deal with. There's a lot of support that's necessary, and we're willing to give it. It's really just going to come down to a matter of, does our community have the will to support that in public education? Do we all truly want that for every single child?
Which is such an interesting question, because we know that lots of folks opt out of that question by saying, well, I will take my child and put them in an independent school. And certainly for lots of kids, independent schools are great options. Nobody's saying that's not the case. But boy, when you opt out of it entirely, then we have a problem.
You know, I'm certainly not going to criticize any parent for making a choice for their child. There are every child's an individual. Every child has different needs. And certainly there are some private schools or independent schools where kids may get some needs met that parents don't feel can happen in the public schools. But even if you opt to do that as a parent, and you obviously would have the means to do that, you can still support public education, because the kid that lives next door to you is going to be impacted. The kid that bags your groceries, the person that ends up being your dentist or your doctor or your mechanic, all of those people get impacted. And so there's still a reason to support public education.
Indeed so. Dr. Harold Marino is with us today. He is the former dean of the School of Science at Hampton University. Dr. Marino, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
Hi. I know that you've had a concern about this issue, so you've developed this program called AP Max.
Yes.
That's designed to essentially track progress in class. And I know there's been this pilot program in Norfolk Public Schools. What have you found with the program?
Well, I'll tell you. Now, what AP Max has done, what we've tried to do is to create with the system something that would stimulate self-motivated learning among our students, because that's pretty much the key. And how we did that is that we applied business management skills to the learning strategies, and we did use a pilot with the Norfolk Public Schools, which we thought was very successful. In other words, those students are introduced to benchmarks, performance charting, and they had key performance indicators where we monitored what is your knowledge of your recently covered material in the class. And it all covers business models such as Six Sigma. Essentially, what AP Max is a performance dashboard for students, teachers, administrators, parents, coaches, and guidance counselors to take a look in and see what's going on. Now, we did pilot this with the Norfolk Public Schools, and the Norfolk Public Schools, with our programmers, developed a very good accountability system. Actually, it is the best accountability system for managing classroom outcomes. And some of the outcomes that we had when we used it with their AP program, Lake Taylor was our best performing school. Their calculus went from a 14% pass rate to a 40% pass rate. World history went from 22% pass to a 66.7% pass. English literature went from 5.3 to 23.5%. Now, is that enough to say, okay, we've got a home run? No, but I think we're in the right direction. I think that the Norfolk Public Schools has been able to identify that accountability is an issue. It probably will be an issue as we go into the next decade or so, because of individuals saying, if we're going to put money up, we need to see what's going on.
Yeah. Okay. Dr. Marino, thank you for being with us today. The program is AP Max, and it helps teachers and students keep track of what's going on in the class. Sends alerts to parents, to tell them when the student is going off the rails academically. And I guess there's a degree to which all of us are getting more involved in this now. I mean, I certainly believe that I'm probably more actively engaged in my child's academic life than my parents were, and that may be a generational thing.
Well, we hope so, and we certainly hope that that'll improve. And we're certainly, as a school system, doing everything we can to make sure our teachers are ready, to build those relationships with parents, to make sure that we have the tools in place. For instance, we have some software now available on the web that parents can come in and check grades and attendance. Teachers are having web pages now where they'll notify folks when homework assignments go out. So it really is about engagement. It really is about everybody coming together around the student and making sure that he or she has whatever they need to be successful.
26 minutes before 1, you can join us, and we'd love to have you do so at 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240. Graham's on the line from Norfolk. Hi, Graham, you're on the air.
Hi there. My name's Graham, and I'm obviously not from Virginia.
I picked up on that.
I came over here as an exchange teacher 3 years ago, and I have 10 years experience in public education in various countries, Japan, Scotland, and Virginia Beach City Public Schools. And I actually just quit teaching after 10 years, and I left teaching very disenchanted with the direction that public education is taking, not just in America, but in Scotland too. And a point I would like to make and to put to the panel is that there seems to be a real issue at the moment about blaming the teacher and putting more and more of the responsibility for educational outcomes onto the teacher, and at the same time the parents taking less and less responsibility for parenting their children. And the school that I taught in, there was one group of children who were being effectively parented, and they generally did the homework assignments. If there were any discipline problems, their parents backed up the school. And then there was a whole other group of children, and their parents had a sort of adversarial relationship with the school. And these students didn't do any work, and therefore they failed the class. And I promise I'll finish with this. I was really disgusted when the administrator at our school sent round an email to the staff, and this is the F of the email. It said, if any child in your class has a D or an E, you are failing that child as a teacher, and you need to change your teaching practice to make sure that everyone passes. And there's a lot of evidence the SOLs have been made easier. That's why the pass rates have gone up. Does everybody know what an SOL is? It's an online test that you click A, B, C, or D. And after 1 year's work, the student has 60 questions to answer A, B, C, or D. And there's a pass mark. What are we assessing?
You bring up a very interesting point that also has to do with this issue of one of the criticisms of education today has to do with this idea of what we're testing, whether we're testing critical thinking skills. And Kathy Grimes, I want to put this to you because I know you've talked to a lot of teachers who probably have expressed to you similar frustrations to what Graham has said.
They have. The SOL, the Standards of Learning Test, which students take, you know, now yearly from grade 3 through 8 and at least once in high school, they in Virginia, those are multiple choice tests, and they are supposed to be linked to the information and skills that students are expected to learn in the core subjects during that year. And at the end of that time, they've got, some 35 to 60 question test. And teachers do express some frustration, but at the same time, if you go back and look at the way we try to figure out whether someone has learned something or they've mastered a skill, there is in some way a test, whether it's a multiple choice test or a skills test or you're writing something or you're performing something. To figure out whether teaching happened and learning happened, we've got some kind of testing mechanism.
It's a very interesting point. I was just reading this morning a quote, and I don't know whether this is original to Dr. Merrill in Virginia Beach Public Schools, but it's a quote that he certainly ascribes to. And he said, the thing is not going to be your ability to learn to read and write. It's going to be your ability to, I'll see if I can get this right, your ability to learn, unlearn, and relearn. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was such an interesting point that really it's a very different world we're involved in. Jay's on the line now from Norfolk. Hi, Jay.
How are you this afternoon?
You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Well, thanks very much. I have a quick comment before I start into any questions. I don't want to sound elitist or anything like that, but I've never spent a minute in a public school, nor has any member of my family. And so I really can't speak to the firsthand nature of public schools. But my question for your panel of guests is, why as a citizen and or taxpayer should I show any interest in a student who is, let's say, falling behind? I don't mean failing one class, one semester, because that happens. Obviously, the kid doesn't get chemistry, he fails it. But I'm talking about a continual failure rate. I heard someone say that, there was the potential for a 21-year-old senior. I don't understand how that can happen. I obviously went to a private school, and 100% of the kids I went to school with graduated on time, right on time. And we went to school from 8:15 to 3:30 every day. And there was no, leave, do this, do that. School was the priority. And I wonder when, in the estimation of your guests, school stopped being a priority for children. When life starts coming into school, obviously takes the back burner. And I just want to know their thoughts on that.
It's an interesting question, Jay. And I would say, in answer to the first portion of your question, the answer is that your private school left some kids behind. There were children who were not admitted to your private school for a variety of reasons, whether they were test scores, whether there was a financial ability to pay. There were probably all kinds of reasons why 100% of the children who applied to your school didn't get in. And that's probably where you start with that answer. The fact that, as David Stockwish says, is the superintendent of Portsmouth Public Schools, we educate every child who gets off the bus, regardless of what their needs are and regardless of what their family and home circumstances are like. But you've asked a really important question, and it's one that more and more people are asking. Vince Rhodes, I know you hear this every day. Why should I pay for a system that, for whatever reason, I am not using? Jay's family says, look, we're not using it. Why should he pay?
Well, I mean, we talked a little bit earlier about that it still touches all parts of the community. It's important to do, and it certainly is important for every child to have that opportunity. I do think, when you talk about kids that are a couple years behind, though, the really important thing is not to give up hope. And I think one of the things that disenfranchises kids is when they suddenly get to a point that they say, there's just no hope for me. I don't see an out. And so I'm either just going to misbehave or I'm going to completely drop out. Interestingly, the day that one of the more scathing columns ran about this dropout factory story, right next to it ran a great story which talked about Project Hope, which is a pilot we're using where we actually worked with some overage for grade kids. And by definition, overage for grade is two years or more older than their peers and behind. We were actually able, with the hard work of some teachers, with some parental involvement, and some hard work on the part of the kids, make no mistake, able to advance some of those kids two grade levels. They went from being fifth graders to being seventh graders. And some of those kids went to being seventh graders in honors level classes. And part of it was they had not had the opportunity to see themselves as successful before. They didn't have the skills necessary, or they didn't see the value. And what we heard from several of those kids over and over again was, suddenly it became apparent to me that I could make it, that I didn't have to be the oldest kid in class, that I could be good at school. And the bottom line is, too many kids come to us with home issues, neighborhood issues.
Taking care of younger children.
I mean, when a lot of us went to school, we didn't have the threat of Columbine every day. We didn't have terrorism. We didn't have shootings in our neighborhoods. And so there's so much baggage. And really the point is, how do we connect? And the other thing that we kind of take issue with the John Hopkins study is, yes, 4 years is really the ideal and what we want. But do you give up on a child if he or she doesn't make it in 4 years? No, you get them out in 5 years. You move heaven and earth and you do whatever you can. And I think that's one of the things that our teachers are tremendously underappreciated for, moving heaven and earth every day.
You know,
for
I go back
kids.
To our first caller who said he dropped out at 78 in the year 1978, not at the age of 78, but in the year of 1978. Got his GED in 83, has achieved a master's degree and a bachelor's degree. In the meantime, Kathy Grimes, I know you have to go, but I hope you'll answer the question our caller asked, because it is one we're starting to hear more and more
about. Why should we do that?
Why should we support, and why should people who are opting out of public education have to support it with their tax dollars, and why can that job not get done as effectively as independent schools can do it?
Well, I think you kind of have to also look at where your tax dollars are going and what you will be supporting that person with. Alternatively, if we do spend the time helping someone get through school, whether it takes an extra year or whatever, or we find an alternative way for someone who was not successful in algebra or whatever the first time to finally get it, the light bulb goes on, they realize the relevance, they, you know, and they go on and they get their high school diploma or GED and then move on to a higher education or a job. If that doesn't happen, then you've got someone out there who can't even get up to the doorstep, let alone through the door, to find family wage jobs, and we're going to be supporting that person somehow with our tax dollars.
The scary thing, if I can jump in on that,
sure.
is I've certainly heard some people talk about this, and it's just a terrifying thing that people that are actually planning for prison sizes and prison construction look at third grade reading scores, and they can tell that if folks aren't reading on grade level by third grade and they aren't making the mark there, that they've got to have more prison beds. And if that doesn't scare you into, you know, saying, gosh, we've got to support public education and get as many people educated as possible, I don't know what will.
Indeed. So unless it is perhaps the fact that when you're in a nursing home, somebody's going to be taking care of you, and I would like them to know the difference between a teaspoon and a tablespoon.
Exactly.
I'm just thinking. Kathy Grimes, thank you for being with us today. And I should note that you wrote in this morning's edition at dailypress.com the news that York County School Superintendent Stephen Staples announced that he will retire at the end of this school year. And boy, people who know Steve Staples, he's a very, very well-respected superintendent, not just in the region, but in the Commonwealth as well. And it sounds like from your article, they don't know whether they're going to go do a national search. So that might suggest there's someone in the ranks they may be looking at as well. So we'll continue to follow that one.
Sounds good.
And hope you will as well, because the only way we get to follow it is if you do. So we're happy about that. Kathy Grimes, thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
All righty. Take care. Kathy Grimes is the education editor and writer with the Daily Press, and Superintendent Staples in York County was named Virginia's 1997 Superintendent of the Year. He's been very active in state and regional organizations. And last year, he helped the district receive full accreditation from the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools. He'll be continuing his work at the College of William and Mary, which is his undergraduate alma mater. He will be a member of the faculty there. How did I know all that? Because I read it in an article by Kathy Grimes at dailypress.com. Cynthia's on the line from Virginia Beach. Hi, Cynthia. You're on the air.
Hi. I was listening to the AP Max section of the program, mm-hmm. and like the accountability concept, because I'm from the district, which is Green Run, and about 20 years ago, my children went to the schools in that district, and I really didn't feel that I was getting a lot of help from the education community then, because I was a single mother and raising children and trying very hard to get them through school. Now I find that Green Run is on that list again, so I'm very interested in how this accountability thing works.
All right. Thank you for the call, Cynthia.
Well, I can't speak to Green Run, obviously, but in Norfolk, we do have a comprehensive accountability system. And the bottom line is, and this kind of addresses the previous caller as well, if the community is going to put up money for public schools, then we certainly believe that we need to be able to show results and we need to be able to demonstrate what we're doing with that money. So in Norfolk Public Schools, there's a comprehensive accountability system for the district, for each school. Teachers keep track of their data. They look at what's going on with kids and can identify specific types of questions or strands where there are difficulties so they can remediate. Kids graph their own results in some of our elementary schools so they can track their improvement and see how they're doing. And it really is about trying to place the appropriate amount of responsibility at every level with the student, with the teacher, with the parent, and bring all those people together.
I remember John Castine, the president of UVA, once hearing him talk once, and he said he can look at a child's zip code and pretty much tell you whether they're going to be successful. And I thought that was in school. I thought that was a very interesting statement, because his point was not that that's the absolute guarantor, but what his point was is it's about where kids come from, too. It's about the environment they live in. It's about socioeconomics. It's about all of that.
Yeah, and one of our core values, and I think one of the things that really makes Norfolk Public Schools special, is that we believe in equity, and we believe that who you are, where you live, what color you are, what your gender is, you know, what your language status is, should not be a predictor of your success. And so everything that we do, the levels of support, the intense levels of professional development, the money that we ask the community for, all goes to ensuring that to the best of our ability, when a child walks in our door, the playing field is as level as possible and people are there ready to help him or her be successful.
I think Jim's on the line from Virginia Beach, and I think this may have been somebody I quoted earlier. Is this Jim Merrill?
Yes, how are you, Kathy?
I am well. Superintendent of Virginia Beach Schools, good to have you with us today.
Thank you. All over the board on the issue today. It's been a good discussion. I just wanted to chime in and say, for me, it really boiled down to the quality of the teacher in the classroom. And we can talk about programs, we can talk about curriculum modification, and we can talk about accountability. But until you've got adults who pretty much say, I've got to develop a relationship, I've got to hold students to a set of standards, and I've got to keep it meaningful for the future in the young person's life, that's what keeps a student in school. That's what keeps them invested in education. And I'm not sure we talk enough about the quality of what's happening in the classroom.
You know, that's an interesting point. I don't know if you were able to hear the first part of our show, but we talked with this 29-year-old teacher at Norview High School, who is the Virginia Teacher of the Year, and he comes at this thing with such passion and such enthusiasm. And I know that you, as well as your colleagues who are superintendents, are facing what has been widely reported as this drain out of the classroom with the retirement of some veteran teachers. Are you seeing enough young people coming into the profession with passion and dedication and commitment like this young man?
Well, before I answer, what I also heard him say, which made me nervous, is he's working on a degree in administration. Now,
it's an interesting point, because that often is the path, isn't it?
Well, it often is for someone who wants to consider supporting a family and making a meaningful livelihood as a primary caregiver. But no, we don't see enough folks choosing a profession, not with the kind of passion and dedication that you want. And it is a type of missionary profession, as Mr. Smeagol said. So, yes, we need more, and we need more folks who are really dedicated and just impassioned about taking care of young people.
And so what role, as you look at it, I mean, you talked about the fiscal realities, and that young man is 29 years old, and his realities are going to change over time in terms of his financial situation, depending on what his family status is and all kinds of other situations. So what role does money play in terms of getting that kind of quality of teacher in the classroom?
I think it's a critical piece, and yet I was debating someone yesterday about the chicken and the egg, respect and salary. Which do you have to have first? And I think our teachers struggle with a kind of respect from yesteryear that we no longer get. And I think by elevating the respect of the profession, then salary can follow. Some would argue the other way around. Well, if you pay more, you'll get the respect. But it's a devilish argument, one that I don't really have a solution to. But I think they're related critically.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today, and thanks for calling in from the road. Did I quote you correctly?
I'm not sure I heard the quote.
Oh, the quote. I think that you, one of the quotes that you gave recently talked about the idea that the key thing in life is not necessarily about learning reading and writing. It's about the ability to learn, unlearn, and relearn. Did I get that right?
You've got it.
All right. James Merrill, good to talk with you today, and thanks for joining us by phone today.
Good job today.
All righty. Thank you so much. That's James Merrill, the superintendent of schools in Virginia Beach City Public Schools.
Yeah, I think it's an absolutely great point, and I know that our superintendent, Dr. Stephen Jones, absolutely agrees that caring, committed relationships in the classroom are very important, that getting the right people in the classroom is critically important, and that, you know, there are critical shortage areas in special education and mathematics and a variety of places, and it is concerning. I mean, and we had a lot of folks focused on making sure that we had people in classrooms. Pay is obviously an issue. I'm very sure that in Virginia Beach, it is very similar to what it is in Norfolk, where the vast majority of our budget goes into direct classroom instruction and those salaries. And so that's really, when you're funding public education, really the majority of what you're funding is putting that body in the classroom. And the question comes down to, do we have the right people there? Are they committed? Are they passionate? Are they knowledgeable?
Well, speaking of caring and committed relationships, I hope you will pass along to Dr. Jones our condolences on the death of his wife. He, in fact, lost her battle with a long-term illness very recently, and in fact, I believe was buried yesterday.
That's correct.
In Baltimore. So it's been a real struggle for him and his family, and a real very challenging and painful time. So please pass along
we
to
will,
him.
And I'm our, sure our, he would have wanted to have been here
I,
talking
I,
with you about
I feel
this.
Confident
about
that
about
as well. He is very passionate on this very issue. It's important and dear to his heart, and so our condolences go to him. And Vince, thanks very much for being with us today. I appreciate it.
No problem. Always a pleasure.
Vince Rhodes is the communications manager and clerk of the school board for the city of Norfolk Public Schools. Well, this is an issue we'll come back to. I'm pretty sure about that. But for now, we'll be back in a moment. It's good to have Charles Lehman with us, who's the president and CEO of Goodwill Industries, and they're expanding their career development and support services with a new center in Virginia Beach. Mr. Lehman, welcome, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Tell us what you're going to be doing there. It's an employment center and what's called a Medical Adaptive Assistive Technology Program. What's that?
Well, we have in our Career Employment Center, we have a number of centers that we have been opening throughout different communities, and the idea is to be able to bring more services to more communities that we have services, that we provide services to. And we tie this in with our retail stores and our donation centers, and it gives us an opportunity to have more points of entry so that if someone is looking for employment or needs assistance to get back into the workforce or wants to improve their skills, they can come to the job center. It is open Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. There's no charge to come in, and they can work on their resume writing assistance if they need some help to beef
and
up their resume. And
is this
so
primarily for people with some sort of disability, or is this for anybody?
This is for anybody. We do have specialized assistance for persons who have other challenges, and we can get into more intensive services. But the job center is open to anyone who wants assistance and wants to use the service.
So people can learn more at goodwillhr.org. The other thing you're doing, and we're going to be quick about this, has to do with this medical and adaptive equipment and supplies piece of the story. What's that about?
That is a gifting program that we provide medical equipment, wheelchairs, walkers, any kind of assistance that a person may have. We receive donations of that equipment. We refurbish it, we make sure it's sanitized, and then anyone that has a need, all they need is a prescription, and we can fit them up with whether it's a motorized wheelchair or crutches, walkers, and we even are available to deliver that. We really need folks to know more about that program because we have an excess amount of inventory. And we'd like to be able to get that fitted up with folks who have a need.
Oh, fantastic.
It's absolutely free.
And so the number is 248-9405, 248-9405. 9405, or you can log on to the website goodwillhr.org. I thought you were going to say you were having problems getting donations. You're really having problems. You've got the donations for the moment. You're trying to get them connected to people who need them. And boy, that is such a struggle if you've got a medical condition that requires that level of support. It's a great, it's just a great thing to know that that's available. Thank you, Charles Lehman, for being with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
All righty. Take care now. That's Charles Lehman, who's the president and CEO of Goodwill Industries. Again, you can learn more about the Employment Center or about the medical adaptive equipment and supplies at goodwillhr.org. Well, thanks so much for being with us today. If there's something that you didn't get a chance to say in today's broadcast, you can always email us at hearsay@whrv.org. Tomorrow, we'll talk about diabetes, interesting new research and a new book coming out on that subject. And we'll also talk about Alzheimer's disease and the way the community and the business world is ramping up to respond. On Friday, we will revisit payday lending. It's an issue that was very front and center in the General Assembly session, and it hasn't gone away. So we'll talk about that on Friday. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.